Skyline's new chicken chili is here. Now you can enjoy that legendary Skyline taste with a new protein option. Try Skyline's chicken chili on Waze, Coney's, and all your Skyline favorites. Feeling good. It's Skyline time.
If you're a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility and your machinery isn't working right, Grainger knows you need to understand what's wrong as soon as possible. So when a conveyor motor falters, Grainger offers diagnostic tools like calibration kits and multimeters to help you identify and fix the problem. With Grainger, you can be confident you have everything you need to keep your facility running smoothly. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome to hour number three, our third and final on this Friday, and our final hour of this week here on the Early Line on Sports Grid. There is still so much to break down, including a full Friday slate in Major League Baseball, 15 games, all 30 clubs, and a marquee matchup this weekend out in Los Angeles. In fact, not just a matchup, but a World Series rematch between the Yankees and the Dodgers that we will fully break down for you in just a matter of moments. And we don't have playoff action tonight, either on the ice in the Stanley Cup postseason or in the NBA playoffs. Of course, it is dwindling down. The Stanley Cup final, a rematch between the Panthers and the Oilers. That starts Wednesday night. The NBA finals starting on Thursday. The Oklahoma City Thunder already there, but an early look once again at game number six tomorrow night in Indianapolis. The Eastern Conference Finals has life. The New York Knicks live. But for how long? That's what we will discuss here, DRS, to start off hour number three.
Yeah, it should be a good one, and thank goodness it's there. It's a Saturday night. Can you imagine if we get a victory for the Knicks on Saturday night that pushes a game number seven on Monday night of next week? We won't have that long crossover. Like, because imagine if we had the games end yesterday. It's like, man, we got a long wait here. But then Saturday got a game, maybe Monday you have a game, and then earlier next week that you're going to get that finally. Is it Thursday next week, I guess, would be? When's the
Thursday, yeah.
When's game number one? Thursday,
June 5th,
which again,
yes,
we get a game
Thursday.
Monday night. You're still basking in it on Tuesday morning. You turn the page on Wednesday, and then you get ready for Thursday action. That would be fun here. Not if you're a Pacers fan or ticket backer, but just from a sport perspective here, would love to see the energy in Madison Square Garden for a game number seven. So betting-wise, I told you already multiple times, I like Indy in game number six. But if I were to lose that wage and we get a game number seven, could that be worth it at that point? Because that would be a lot of fun.
There will be 9 days off, DRS, for the Oklahoma City Thunder between when they won the Western Conference crown and when the NBA Finals begin on Thursday, a long layoff, but that does not change regardless of when the Eastern Conference Finals comes to a close. A lot of Major League Baseball to break down. We'll talk some college football before we end out this Friday and this week on TEL as well. But DRS, we start with a look at game number six and what remains in the Eastern Conference Finals. The New York Knicks on the brink of elimination keep this series and their season afloat. But for how much longer? Just one more game or maybe a seventh game? A winner-take-all game inside the world's most famous arena for a spot in the NBA Finals? Oh, the mind can start to dream. What do the people have to say about it? It was the question in Fade the Public. A game six tomorrow night in Indianapolis. That we know for sure. The Pacers, a 3.5-point home favorite, a total at 218. So now, with what we saw in game five and a decisive victory for New York, winning by 17, our only double-digit win so far in the Eastern Conference Finals in any of our five games. Has it changed the tune for this series for us or for you? Who will win the Eastern Conference Finals? That was the question at Sports Grid. And your three options remaining: the Pacers in six, the Pacers in seven, or the New York Knicks forcing that seventh game and taking advantage inside the Mecca, inside Madison Square Garden. Most of the public, DRS, despite the performance out of the Knicks last night in game five, still expecting Indiana in six games. More than 60% of the vote saying the Pacers in six. Yesterday, Donnie, you correctly faded the public and cashed a ticket on the Knicks covering as a 4.5-point favorite in game number 5. Will you do the same today? Are you fading the public?
Yeah, no. I'm with the public. 60% right now, close to 61% coming in with the Pacers in 6. And again, we asked the public a question that's a little bit convoluted. Who will win the Eastern Conference Finals? There's supposed to be two answers here.
Come on now,
Pacers, Knicks. But now we got Pacers, Pacers, and Knicks. So if you probably should combine the 60.5% with the 9.7% to roughly give you 70%
right.
as
that's
a favorite
fair.
Here in the Pacers, because you have 6 and 7. That would make a little bit more sense to the Knicks there in 29%. The only thing we're missing is Knicks in 6 at this point, just to really completely break the brain of people here on a Friday morning, because they can't win in game number 6 at this point and win the series. But for me, it's been the Pacers. I think they get it done in 6. That's the way I voted. Let's go public. I'm back on your bandwagon today.
Is there anything that is as non-consequential to your life as the fade the public poll in the wording of these questions that angers you as much as the phrasing of the fade the public poll questions?
Yeah, you probably should have, you could have included the 4, like Pacers in 5. Like, wait a second, did they just lose like game number 5? And you probably would have got a couple people still voting, figured out the Pacers should have won that in 5. So yeah. I like the fact. I guess it's a running plot now where it's like, you know what, we're going to throw brain busters at the people early in the morning so we can maybe trip them up on their vote. I get it.
When our Fade the Public poll is released, I'm always kind of like getting ready for the show. I quickly glance at my phone. I vote quickly.
Yep.
I hit a retweet on it to try to get it out there to the people and expand the votes that we have. I can only imagine, slash, I would love to be a fly on the wall of where DRS is in his house when he reads the Fade the Public
poll
and just goes, are you kidding me? Like, get it with this wording. With this phrasing, to see how angry he could be early in a morning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's it. Like, usually, like, let's just say I'm shaving, I'll hit it there, and I'm like, you know, I forgot about it. Then we'll check in right around 10 a.m. Eastern to see what that poll looks like. I'm like, ooh, I don't even remember what I even answered. Oh, there's the check mark. That's what I did. And then I go, wait a second. Let me read this again to actually think it's correct. So this morning, I did read it correctly here and didn't pay much attention to who will win the Eastern Conference Finals. I just saw Pacers in 6 and go, yeah, that's what's going to happen. That's the way I voted, a part of that 61% out here.
And in the serious nature of this discussion, this is what Donnie was saying all along entering game 5, and of course that statement has remained the same. He expected the New York Knicks and fading the public yesterday, both in our poll and the betting statistics on the FanDuel Sportsbook, to take care of home floor advantage and to win that game rather comfortably. New York does so by 17, but the largest margin in the Eastern Conference Finals has not really changed his mind. Let's look at those series outright odds. Once again, DRS entering game number 6. Of course, Indiana, 3.5-point home favorite. That live money line price is now minus 176. 2 pennies of difference from Indiana in the series price to win in 6 games at minus 174. We have talked about how there's not a price on the Knicks to win in 7. It's their outright number at plus 295. But does it actually add up to what a 2-leg money line parlay would be? For the Knicks at plus 148 on the money line in Indianapolis tomorrow night, and then probably as at least a 3.5-4-point favorite for the winner take all game 7. Not necessarily, at least in the way that looks. But again, DRS series outright numbers, Indiana a minus 370 favorite. And really, when you think about the outright price for game number 6, minus 176, that is the Pacers in 6. That is what the public is voting so heavily behind.
Yeah, and it's crazy to think, like, Indiana in 6, you get the price point of minus 174, but, you know, Indiana, technically, if they need 7, your price point is actually minus 370. Now, understand it. You get 2 cracks at it, but it's not as if you're getting 2 cracks where it's, like, you know, old school, like, Major League Baseball or whatever, like, games. Remember the NBA used to be, Ben, what was it, 2 games at home, 3 on the road, and then 2 games at home where, like, the Pacers, oh, yeah, the Pacers got game 6 and 7 at home. That's why it's so high. 2 cracks at home, 2 favorites here. That's not the case. Like, you go home and then on the road here. So it's a marked disadvantage for game number 7 for the Pacers, even though you'd have them technically as a favorite because you have 2 games left to play. So if you're saying, I don't know if the Pacers win this now, well, then just take it in 7. Don't take the minus 370. Say, hey, you know what? I'll just take a small flyer and a small amount of money that you need to win on the plus 520, as opposed to laying that huge margin of a minus 370. But for me, Indiana in 6 always made some sense. It's basically the money line there to win it in 6. That's what's going to take place. Indiana Indiana's going to win. The spread is close enough where I don't want to lay that huge juice. I'll just lay the 3.5 points here and say they win it by 3+ points in this to give me an honest look at that victory.
And we talked about the betting stats yesterday, overwhelmingly expecting the underdog and the Pacers to cover that spread and maybe even win outright. 74% of the money right now in the spread betting, backing Indiana, laying 3.5 points on FanDuel. 68% of the overall volume of bets backing the Pacers.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, for prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Hey, it's Austin James. If you're like me, trying to live your best life while living with diabetes, you can relate to worrying if you're doing a good job managing your diabetes. I use the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor to get real-time glucose readings and see the impact of every meal and activity to make better decisions. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor can help me live life with diabetes on my own terms, and it gives me more time for the things I love, like being a dad and a musician. Now this is progress. Learn more at freestylelibre.us.
For prescription only, safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
A full Friday slate in Major League Baseball. That's all 15 games in all 30 clubs around the MLB diamond in action on this Friday. And this weekend, DRS, a marquee matchup out in Los Angeles. It's the Dodgers and the Yankees, a World Series rematch from this past November. Of course, the Dodgers winning a World Series over New York, the first matchup between these two since what we saw to end out the 2024 MLB season. And when you have marquee matchups, as we saw during rivalry weekend, oftentimes the FanDuel Sportsbook will put a price on who wins a three-game set. That is the case for us here. The Dodgers with home field advantage at Chavez Ravine, a series favorite at minus 140. That makes what we're going to see here today, DRS, a little bit more interesting. The L.A. Kid back in his hometown. Max Fried, who has been diabolical in his debut year for the Pinstripes on the bump, has his New York Yankees as a road favorite tonight in Los Angeles for game number one. The updated money line price is minus 122 in favor of New York. The Catman, Tony Gonsolin, on the other side for LA. A total stands at 9. We'll get to the overall series picture, DRS, what it means significance-wise early on this season for 2025 following a World Series rematch in just a moment. But let's start with the debut game tonight on a Friday in LA. How do you see it playing out?
Yeah, look, I got to tell you, the first thing you look at is that 9 number and say, yeah, they have really good lineups on both sides here. You got weather conditions out there in L.A., 75 degrees at first pitch, light wind blowing out to center field. It is a pitcher's ballpark overall. But Max Fried, like, there's 28 pitchers on the card today with a minimum of 10 innings pitched in 2025. Max Fried's the best going away, an xFIP minus number of 78. How about an ERA on the season of 1.29? How about an xFIP number of 3.20, which is the best on the card, one of the best on the card? Actually, it is the best on the card today, excuse me, as an xFIP number. How about 20th? That's Tony Gonsolin, the starting pitcher today for the Los Angeles Dodgers. He comes in at a 105 xFIP minus, which isn't bad, a 4.68 ERA number and a 4.16 xFIP number. Now, granted, if you look at power of the lineups, it's probably better on the Dodgers with Otani, Betts, Hernandez, Freeman, Will Smith, Páez. I mean, those guys have been kicking it all season long, but no slats there on the opposite side is the New York Yankees. And pitching wins in Major League Baseball. Would you like it better to be in, you know, at home where maybe you're more comfortable? Sure. Yeah. But I'm taking the better pitcher tonight and saying, I don't know if we get 10 total runs because can Gonsolin get blown away? Sure. Like yesterday, you saw Zach Wheeler get blown away for the Philadelphia Phillies, something we were shocked by. But I look, the Yankee tax is here tonight at minus 130. I think they win this game. And I don't know if we get 10 runs in this one, put it that way.
Max Fried has been incredible this season in his first year with the Yankees. And because of it, New York is that road favorite. The LA Dodgers DRS, of course, with the expectation this season, are not often booked as an underdog. In fact, LA has only been a dog in 9 total games this season. That's the fewest around MLB. They are 4-5 outright in those 9 games. But this will be the first time that Los Angeles has been booked as an underdog at home inside Chavez Ravine. We have not seen the Dodgers as a home dog just yet. That is set to change tonight, a little bit after 10 p.m. Eastern time, but of course 7 p.m. local on a Friday night in L.A. A marquee matchup this weekend and a marquee series, DRS, that we can expect maybe to not just be a World Series rematch, but a World Series preview. Is that where you stand on both of these teams at this time? That what we are going to see tonight, we are more than likely to see come late October, early November.
Yeah, no, it makes some sense because why? The Yankees have been sensational in the American League, in a down American League. Yeah. They are the front runners to me, and you see them at 35-20 on the season. Now, the Dodgers, which the crazy part about it is the Dodgers are 34-22, and we still look at them like, that's an underwhelming season right there. Yeah. We expected them to be, I don't know, 44-11 at this point or something ridiculous like that. It's Major League Baseball. It's a long way. But understand this. You don't win a World Series at the end of September. You win that by winning in the playoffs. And these two teams are deep-pocketed owners that if they feel around the All-Star break and or trade deadline that they're ready to make a run and win the World Series, they will add on to already talented teams. So as much as I love the Philadelphia Phillies and maybe the Mets can make a run, and we love the stories of the Detroit Tigers and what they can be in the playoffs, but understand this, these two teams know how to win world championships in their history, and they have deep pockets to sort of stride for that. So yes, I do think we are looking at a legitimate World Series preview this weekend because why? Yeah. The Dodgers are really good. At the end of the season, they'll be good. The Yankees, the same way for me.
Yeah, and Donnie, when you look at the odds, that's the story we are being told right now. Both teams are the short pennant favorites in their respective leagues. The Yankees in the AL. Of course, the Dodgers have been a short favorite in every single category all season long, even before the 2025 MLB campaign got started. The Dodgers are the favorites to win a World Series at plus 240. The Yankees have that second best price. It is still $3 back of LA. But that gap has actually tightened a little bit from the preseason numbers and the differentiating price the Dodgers had just so short in comparison to every other club around Major League Baseball. To Donnie's point as well, the Yankees' path to get back to a World Series might actually be a little bit easier. There's only two teams right now in the American League that have more than 30 wins. The Yankees at 35-20, and the Tigers with the best record in the AL in all of the bigs, 37-20. There are 7 teams right now, including LA, with more than 3 wins around the National League. The Dodgers, 34-22. The Phils, DRS, courtesy of a series victory against Atlanta this week, best record in the National League at 36-20. Although the Dodgers have a shorter price to win both the National League pennant and that World Series crown, you might actually argue at this moment the Pinstripes have a better path to get back to a World Series matchup.
Yeah, exactly. And the old thought process is you can't win a World Series unless you're actually in the World Series and playing for it. And the Yankees might have an easier path, as you pointed out, than the Dodgers have. But again, this the teams that we're looking at right now, and this includes the National League teams like the Phillies and the Mets, like they're not going to be the same teams that you're going to see in late October. Injury is going to happen, but also teams are going to double down at the trade deadline and add superstar players to sort of impact it. And also, very rarely, unless it's a small market team, like when the Dodgers are going for it, and they just won it last year, and they have a ridiculously high payroll. If they feel at the trade deadline they're about to win another World Series, they don't stay put and be like, ha, we're good to go here. They add another all-star caliber player. That's the scary part about these teams, because if you were asking me, hey, is Detroit going to win it? They have the best record in baseball. I'd say, this is probably the team we're going to get in late September. That's not the case with the big money market, big power teams.
And the Dodgers are still the favorites right now, despite being 34-22 at minus 160. Have the best regular season record in the bigs. More around MLB next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the FreeStyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
A full Friday slate around Major League Baseball, setting up a huge weekend in the sport on the diamond. A divisional duel this week in the American League Central, where, Donnie, we were just breaking down the Yankees and the Dodgers in the marquee matchup this weekend out in the City of Angels. But the best record right now in all of the major leagues, that still belongs to the Detroit Tigers. 37-20 for the Tigers as they head to Kansas City this weekend to take on their divisional foes in the Royals. The lines for game number one, Casey Mize and Seth Lugo on the bump for those two sides. Mize for Detroit, Lugo on the other side for Kansas City. And the Tigers, an ever so slight now, -120 on money line favorite inside Kauffman Stadium. Total stands at 8.5. DRS, tell us, what is the play today in KC?
Yeah, take a look at Casey Mize on the mound today for the Detroit Tigers. Good season so far. 91 XFIP, minus having an ERA of 2.45 and an XFIP number of 3.72. Very manageable on all of those. Seth Lugo doing the mound today for Kansas City. He's coming in here with a 99 XFIP minus, a decent ERA of 3.02, and also a 4.02 XFIP number. You know me. I take a look at some of these matchups and say, all right, Seth Lugo's on the mound. He has gotten hit around a little bit by left-handed batters this year. 131 lefties that he's faced on the season, a 205 ISO against, and a 334 weighted on base percentage. You take a look at the last 30 days, it's similar. 167 ISO, which is slightly less, but also a slightly higher weighted on base percentage of 350. He's not a big K guy, but you look at that lineup to start. Kerry Carpenter, left-handed batter against right-handed pitching over the past month. How about a 365 weighted on base percentage? Cole Keith, 379. Riley Green, lefty, also 464. Wenciel Perez, who is a switch hitter of a bat from the left-hand side. Not a lot of at-bats against righties, but still a 403 weighted on base percentage. I love those guys with legitimate chances to get RBI. And also today, 73 degree temperatures, which is nice, and a light wind blowing out to right field, which could aid some of those batters from the left-hand side. Casey Mize on the opposite side. He's got some pretty good numbers, though. On the season, 189 batters he's faced. How about a 147 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 272 against? Bobby Witt Jr., Vinny Pasquantino, Mikel Garcia, and Kyle Isbell with good numbers. But the rest of that lineup, a lot to be desired. Lean here for me on the Detroit Tigers at that slight price of -116. Let's just see if we can get some runs. The 8 is a low number. Not in love with both lineups, but some good RBI props possibly for the left-handed hitters on the Detroit Tigers today for me.
A 7-game differential between KC and Detroit. The Royals are 30-27. When you look at the rest of the division, a 6-game lead for the Tigers in front of both the Guardians and the Twins, both Cleveland and Minnesota, 30-25. Speaking of the Twins, they are out in Seattle this weekend taking on the Mariners. Minnesota, the longest win streak this year in the Bigs, 13 consecutive. But when that came to a close a few weekends ago in the 9 games since, the Twins 4-5. The Mariners still a half game advantage over Houston for the top spot in the AL West. But the M's just got beat in their midweek series yesterday in extras, 9-3, the defeat against the Washington Nationals. Seattle has dropped 4 of its previous 5. This weekend set starts tonight out in the Northwest with the Mariners a -144 home money line favorite. A short total tonight standing at only 7. DRS, what do you like out in Seattle today between the Mariners and the Twins?
Yeah, not a great profile, per se, for the Seattle Mariners lineup going up against Zebby Matthews, but Zebby Matthews only 35 total batters faced on the season. It's hard to try to compile some statistics and say what you don't like and what you do like. Cal Raleigh's always going to be in there. Rowdy Tellez will be in there, just as left-handed hitters going up against a right-handed pitcher. But the fact of the matter is, where's the offense going to come from Minnesota side of things? Buxton and Larnach and Cody Clemens all have decent weighted on base percentage and ISO power numbers against right-handed pitching on the season. But you take a look at Brian Wu, overall, 249 batters he's faced. How about a 102 ISO power number against and a weighted on base percentage of 248? You take that into the last 30 days, which is 122 batters that he's faced. That goes lower to an 092 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 244 and a K rate of 25%. There's a reason why Seattle is favored by that much. Number one, they're going to be home. And number two, they have the better pitcher on the mound. The 7, it's hard to go under 7. Because again, 3 from either side, like starting pitchers, let's just go 6 innings here. You still got to deal with the bullpen and extra innings. innings. So it's hard to say I love an under seven, even though I lean to that direction. But sometimes just lean on the better pitcher, and that better pitcher today is Brian Woo.
Yeah, Brian Woo on the bump for Seattle. Again, a half-game lead for the Mariners right now in the American League West. We'll talk about the Astros, who got beat bad yesterday as well, allowing 13 runs to the Tampa Bay Rays. That extended weekend series, a four-game set in H-Town, continues on this Friday. Still so much to break down around Major League Baseball. We'll do it on the other side of the break from the mind of one Donnie Wrightside. Pro baseball today, by the way. Starts at 10 a.m. Eastern time each and every Sunday.
Yeah, love.
That's good. Oh, you were hyped by that.
It's what we love.
To the break next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Plenty more setting the stage for a weekend in Major League Baseball from the bright mind of Donnie Wrightside. Let's continue breaking down all 15 of the games we have on this Friday. Now, we might not get to all 15, but a ton of the games that we have on this full Friday slate. We talked about Seattle, half-game advantage right now for the M's atop the American League West. But the Houston Astros, only that half game behind. The Astros got beat bad yesterday in the opener of a four-game weekend set against the Rays. This one not at George Steinbrenner Field in Tampa, in Houston. 13-3. Donnie's favorite pitcher on the card, Ryan Mucho Gusto yesterday for the Astros. Now, he wasn't overly bad. The Rays added a ton of runs late. Houston's ace is Framber Valdez. He gets the start today for the Astros as they look to even up this weekend set early here on this Friday. Minus 164, that updated money line price, and a total now up by a hook DRS to 8. What will we see here in game number 2 in Houston?
Probably a good pitching performance here, and hopefully you get that for Houston. You didn't get it yesterday. Starting pitch was okay. Bullpen was absolutely terrible. Then you're going to lean on Framber Valdez, third overall in the card today with XFIP numbers on a total of 28 pitchers. He's coming in with an 82 XFIP minus a 3.39 ERA and a 3.36 XFIP number. You take a look at Valdez here. Let's just go over the past 30 days as a left-handed pitcher. How about a 25% strikeout rate? How about lefty striking out against him at a 42% clip here? And you take a look at the ISO power number, which means extra base hits and power, an 085. And you take a look at the weighted on base percentage, 267. Equal opportunity too, Ben. Dominating lefty and righty batters here. You flip to that Tampa Bay Rays lineup, which I usually like the lefties in that lineup. But again, lefties on lefties against a lefty pitcher that dominates lefties usually doesn't work out in your favor. Now, having said that, Diaz, Caminero, Lowe, and also Morrall, all low weighted on base percentages and ISO power numbers going up against left-handed pitching. Danny Jansen, the only bright spot in the middle of that lineup, but that's not good enough. You can't have one or two guys that are hitting left-handed pitching well when you're going against an elite left-handed hitting pitcher. So it is a heavy favorite for Houston, but a bounce back should be in place today. You take a look at Pepio on the other side. He's actually had a pretty clean last 30 days. ISO power number, 116. Weighted on base percentage, 273, which over the entire parts of the season, 261 batters faced, those numbers are elevated. So two pitchers coming in really good form, but again, it is a small ballpark that usually doesn't hold home runs and runs all that well, like you saw last night, particularly from Tampa side. Maybe more of a lean to the under today, even though that lineup today for the Houston Astros really checks out well against right-handed pitching over the past couple weeks. So if I'm saying, you know what, lean towards the money line on Houston more than maybe the under in the game.
Junior Caminero, by the way, a career-best six RBIs yesterday, a part of the 13 runs scored by the Rays yesterday. A big one for Tampa to start off. The Rays, the only other team right now in the American League East, not named the New York Yankees, above 500. Yeah. The Blue Jays in even 500. The Boston Red Sox, now four games below 500. A lot of excitement for this year's Sox team, DRS, and maybe being a true pennant contender in the AL hasn't happened just yet. Boston has dropped five consecutive games. What is this? MLB rivalry weekend, a second edition. Yeah. We head to Atlanta today. The old rivals, the Braves and the Red Sox, face off this weekend in the A. The Braves avoided a sweep yesterday in the finale against Philadelphia. But like Boston, a disappointing start. Three games below 500 for the Braves. They are a home favorite today. Grant Holmes gets the nod. Lucas Giolito on the other side for the Sox. What's the play today in the A?
Yeah, it's nice to have close to 10 mile an hour winds blowing out to left center field today. Temperatures in the low 70s and not really worried about rain. That's fantastic. We actually love that. Grant Holmes, not a great pitcher, but also only 16th on the card today out of 28th. So right around midway, 100 xFIP minus, which is average. And ERA, that's decent at 3.68 and an xFIP number of 3.97. Very manageable. On the season, he's done really well against left-handed batters at 150 ISO and a weighted on base percentage of 275. But if you flip it over to the last 30 days, he's faced 65 left-handed batters, a 258 ISO, and a weighted on base percentage of 335, and a little bit dipping there in that K rate. You take a look at some of the left-handed batters in the lineup for Boston that have done very well against right-handed pitching over the past month. Starts with Jarren Duran, a 187 ISO power number, weighted on base percentage of 360. Rafael Devers, due to bat two in the lineup tonight, 297 ISO with a 475 weighted on base percentage going up against right-handed pitching. And then you have Willy Abreu, one of my favorite batters in that lineup, 83 at bats against right-handed pitching over the past month, 262. Now, also understand this. The Atlanta Braves yesterday played two games in Philadelphia, and you were on the road and you're flying back. But that top of the lineup looks decent. Acuna, Baldwin, Ozuna, Olsen, and Riley, all heavy, weighted on base percentages against right-handed pitching over the past 30 days, which Lucas Giolito has struggled against lefties over the past 30 days here. So those lefties in the lineup is Matt Olsen and Drake Baldwin, probably legitimate chances to get RBI in that spot here. A little bit of a heavy favorite for Atlanta to sort of back it that way. So maybe a couple RBI props make a little bit more sense with some of those left-handed batters going against these two right-handed pitchers.
Yeah, Donnie, it's a matter of time right now for these teams to start to figure things out. There's a lot of this MLB season remaining, but you really got to start to turn things around rather quickly as you approach the end of May. Two more days in May, and then it's June, and then before you know it, you're nearing the MLB All-Star break in the middle of July. Fork Watch is out for the Braves. Red Sox not nearly as high of expectations, so maybe not on Fork Watch just yet. But Boston was just swept by the Milwaukee Brewers, including a couple of extra inning walk-offs for the Brew Crew. They've won four straight, eight of their last 11. They're now above 500 by a game, and they head to Philadelphia today, where the Phils await this weekend with the best record in the National League, 36-20, the mark for Philadelphia. Today, the Phils, a home favorite, around minus 142 on the money line. DRS, that total on its way up, 9.5. Should be a decent Friday night in the greater regional Philadelphia area, if I am not mistaken. How much offense do we see tonight at the bank?
Still some rain in the forecast. I don't know if it's going to be around game time or maybe late in the game, because we're expecting a couple inches of rain at least overnight. Hopefully that doesn't creep into this one. But 73 degree temperatures, you like light wind blowing out, you like that as well. But DL Hall, I'm listed as a starting pitcher here. Only 10 batters faced on the season. Ooh. It doesn't list him as an opener here, so I don't know how long he goes. But also the question is going to be, is Bryce Harper going to be back in the lineup after basically missing three games? Missed the first game of the Atlanta series after one at bat, and then sat out the doubleheader after the rain out here. So maybe he comes back healthy in this. The one guy that doesn't care who it's lefties or righties, it's Kyle Schwarber. How about 42 at bats against left-handed pitching as a lefty that he struggled with in his career? A 441 ISO and a 466 weighted on base percentage. Now, Taijuan Walker has been decent for the Philadelphia Phillies. Not a big strikeout guy, but look at his last 72 batters that he's faced. An 078 ISO power number and a 258 weighted on base percentage. I would lean towards the Philadelphia Phillies, but they also were home at least and played a doubleheader, had to use some pitchers in there. Maybe they're a little bit, you know, rest for the weary, not on their side, but I'm looking forward to seeing if Bryce Harper does come back tonight. If he does, 9-10 runs at Citizens Bank Ballpark isn't a ton when you don't really have two flamethrowers per se on the mound. Could it go over? Yes, but the numbers, if Harper's not playing, and then you take a look at this lineup tonight for the Brewers, which is underwhelming against right-handed pitching, and Walker's been good, I don't know if we get 10 runs tonight, to be honest.
Yeah, I could see that, right? We have a very high total there working its way up to 9.5. Dayton Lane Hall, that's DL Hall, who has made one appearance this year for Milwaukee, set to get the start tonight, though, for the Brewers against the Philadelphia Phillies. Again, a full slate on this Friday, a great weekend ahead in Major League Baseball. Where, DS, we talked about some disappointing teams to start off this year. One of the more surprising teams in a positive way who has had an unreal month of May, that would be the St. Louis Cardinals, 14-17 at the end of April. Now 32-24, 18-7, the mark for the Redbirds. And Donnie's favorite pitcher in Major League Baseball on the bump today, that's the big lib, Matthew Liberatore, as the Cardinals get ready for a weekend set against the Texas Rangers. St. Louis, an ever so slight road moneyline favorite today. Will Matthew Liberatore deliver for St. Louis?
Yeah, I think St. Louis wins because I do think they have the better pitcher on the mound on the season. You take a look at Jack Leiter. He's got a 126 xFIP minus number, an ERA above 4, but an xFIP number of over 5, really struggling over the past 30 days with left-handed batters. Lars Nootbaar, Brandon Donovan in the middle of that lineup, Alec Burleson do make some sense. But one of my favorite hitters in Major League Baseball, Mason Winn, in that number 2 hole, a 496 weighted on base percentage against right-handed pitching over his past month.
Love it, DRS. Game 6 preview in Indy next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey, it's Austin James. Yes, I'm living with diabetes, but it doesn't have to define me. Thanks to the Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor, I get real-time glucose readings throughout the day. The Freestyle Libre 3 Plus sensor is small and easy to wear, giving me the freedom to focus on my life as a parent and a musician. Now this is progress. You can get a free sensor at freestylelibre.us.
Offer available for people who qualify. Visit myfreestyle.us to see all terms and conditions. Certain exclusions apply. Data on file, Abbott Diabetes Care, or prescription only. Safety info found at freestylelibre.us.
Ending out this Friday, sure, no playoff games tonight, but there is one more playoff game in the conference finals round tomorrow in Indianapolis. It is game number 6 between the Pacers and the Knicks. New York winning by 17 with its season on the brink in game number 5. Our only game in the Eastern Conference Finals so far decided by double digits. Is there more life and a renewed sense of confidence for the Knicks on the road in Indianapolis tomorrow night against the Pacers? Or will the Pacers, with a sense of resolve, back on its own home floor, ice out this series, clinch it in game number 6, and head back to the NBA Finals for the first time in 2.5 decades? DRS, from the numbers perspective, that's what we expect to happen. Indiana, a 3.5-point home favorite, minus 176, that updated money line price, and a total working its way up now to 219. From the numbers, DRS, what do you expect to happen in game number 6 tomorrow night in downtown Indy?
I expect the Indiana Pacers to win this game. I expect them to cover the 3.5-point spread. And I'm interested to see, because we see that graphic at 217.5 as a total, now sitting at 219 at the FanDuel Sportsbook, where that winds up. Because, again, a little bit more free-flowing typically in series that start, and then sort of when you have the grind, everybody's in it together. Every possession means so much. Usually the tempo does slow down. And also, as I pointed out early in the show, the referees as well understand we don't want to be the focal point. Like, I don't want to give Jalen Brunson 3 fouls in the first quarter in a pivotal game number 6, which they have to win, and he can't play until the second half. I don't want to give Carl Anthony Towns that ticky-tack foul that he loves to get. Maybe I don't blow it there in game 6 or game 7 if it gets that late, which means that it's a little bit more physical brand of basketball, which never leads to more points at that point. So I do lean towards the under, but for me, I thought the Knicks would win game number 5, and I think the Pacers are going to win game number 6. And if that can say, well, again, my favorite thing to say is, right, well, I think the Pacers win, Ben, but I don't know if they can win by 3.5. Right. Like, nobody's doing that. Like, you're going to pick the Pacers to win. You expect them to win convincingly, which would mean 5-plus points in this game. We're not worried about the point spread.
And this really has always been Donnie's philosophy on this series. I thought Indiana would win this series as well to claim the Eastern Conference. I've got a 9-1 ticket on the Pacers to win an NBA championship. We'll figure it out once we get there against the Oklahoma City Thunder. So did the 17-point margin, our most lopsided contest so far in any of the 5 of the Eastern Conference Finals, change DRS's mind? No. Did it change yours or the overall assessment? I'm not entirely sure. And you did have to appreciate the response, DRS, at least based on the post-game press conference from Indiana last night. Hey, listen, we'll be honest. New York came out here with that sense of urgency and beat us. They were more physical. We now know we have to take that back to our own home floor inside Gainbridge Fieldhouse in game number 6. It's nice to talk it. Now it's time to walk the walk tomorrow night on a Saturday in Indy. Total on its way up. Now at 219, you saw 217.5 on the graphic. Earlier this morning, 218, and now up by another full point. DRS, if the Pacers win tomorrow night and claim that spot in the NBA Finals, clinching this series, what does that mean for the total?
Look, I think the total, again, it goes to the under. Because if we're looking at a game where the anticipation is one team just played a game, it's a great correlation too, right? Game number five, yeah. What did you see out of the New York Knicks? Hey, man, they played really good defense. They were high energy, high intensity. Well, if it's not easy, everybody would just be high intensity and play great defense every game, and everybody would win an NBA championship. That's why I coach on. I was like, can this actually be sustainable where the Knicks say, hey, we finally found something? Because you look at the starting lineup, what was the best in there? 15 points. Everybody else was below that. You're not going to hold a team specifically like the Pacers at home to that level two straight games, or let alone three straight games. So something has to give. But for me, I just don't know if we get the tempo, because we understand that the Pacers are more athletic and they do want to run. I understand that. But it still takes two to tango when you have a total, unless you just get a blowout of 140 to 100 and nobody cares because one team was so far and away better, it didn't matter to the other side. I just want to see, like, first quarter, like, how does that go? Is Brunson lighting it on fire? Is Halliburton launching logo threes, knocking them down the first 3 minutes of the game? Because that'll dictate a lot. And what was it? Was it game number four? What was the game that was like 43-37? Or was that game four,
43-35. Indiana came out and blitzed, but New York kept pace. Yeah.
Exactly. Like, I don't think we're going to get that type of start here because of what is actually on the line, where for one team, there is no tomorrow. And I said multiple times, for the Pacers, I mean, there is a tomorrow in game number seven, right? Theoretically for them, but they understand the task at hand. It's not getting back to New York, which that'll be such a tough basketball game to win. So for me, can they get over? Sure, they can. But I have this feeling, Ben, it's like a 108-101 type game, right? Where both teams creep around 100, but we don't have that crazy runaway. And also understand this, like, if we are getting a crazy runaway early, one team is certainly going to slow that game late in the game, and bench players come in and nobody cares. But I expect a really hard fought game both ways and a close game, which means we don't get that extra fouling, right? So in the final 2 minutes of a game, Ben, if we're 98 or 100-99, you're going to play that all the way out at this point. And I don't expect you get that 8, 9, 10, 12 point minutes that you would get to sort of bump you up over it if you had like a 6 or 7 point game. So it's twofold for me, I should say. Just the way the game is going to be dictated playing from the referees. I don't think we get 40 free throw attempts for each side. So I'm playing this to the under.
There is a direct correlation, at least in the two Knicks victories that we have seen, both of those games staying well under, and New York holding Indiana to 100 in game three and only 94 last night. The Pacers and their offensive performance in game five, the only time a team in this series has failed to reach the century mark. And DRS, a big reason for that, only 8 points out of Tyrese Halliburton. On the other side, 32 points for Jalen Brunson, his 10th 30-plus point performance in this Knicks playoff run, the most for a New York Knick in franchise history within the postseason. Of course, that is the focal point. 31.5 for Brunson tomorrow night, 20.5 for Halliburton. Which of these two stars would you look to the over first and foremost?
It's probably just going to be Brunson. I just, you know, if he's not even shooting 20 times in a game, Ben, now certainly hit going over those 30 point numbers. Now, he should have blasted it last night. Like, hey, that was an easy one. Theoretically, it wasn't. Like, he's only scored 32 points. He had to go over 30.5. Now it does get higher, 31.5. It is on the road. And if I'm anticipating a lower scoring game, then maybe it makes some sense where you just say, let's just fade Brunson and go under. But it's hard to do that because every game, it feels like he scores 15 first quarter points. Like, you're halfway done and only a quarter of the game is down, so it's hard to fade him. Halliburton has to bounce back. When you're at home, you're supposed to play better, and he understands that. So usage rate-wise, Brunson will be there, and he'll probably get that number. But Halliburton, for me, usage rate, I don't think is going to be the issue. Like, hey, you know, I'm just going to let everybody else star out here, and I'll just sit back in the cut, and we still win this game. He should go over his points prop as well.
Betting above the rim, we'll have you covered tomorrow morning for game number six in Indy. DRS, until we talk again on Monday, my friend, have a great time on the money line. Have a lovely weekend. More on the early line next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Everybody's getting in the mix here as we welcome you back to the early line on a Friday. Listen, we love everybody here. John Grill holding things down for us. Just wants to be involved in the production, and he makes us look pretty each and every day. A few more minutes here on the Friday edition of the Early Line, ending out this week on the Sports Grid Network. And this week, maybe you've been following along with a lot of the headlines that we've brought you here in college football. At the end of May, spring meetings for a bunch of the power conferences around the sport. Last week, we saw the ACC spring meetings, Big Ten spring meetings, although not a ton of headlines out of the Big Ten conference. We saw this week in Orlando, Big 12 spring meetings, and of course, a ton of focus on the SEC spring meetings down in Florida. And there's been a ton of conversation about the sport and where college football is heading based on scheduling and based on expansion of the college football playoff. Of course, a straight seeding model for the second and potentially final year of the 12-team era starting this season in 2025, and then more than likely expansion to 14 or what is most likely 16 teams beginning in 2026. So how will that look? Will it be the five automatic bids for the five highest-ranked conference champions and 11 at-large spots, or will it be something that has also been highly discussed, automatic qualifiers for our Power Four conferences? Four for each the Big Ten and the SEC, two for the ACC and Big 12, highest-ranking group of five conference champ, and only three at-large spots. Well, there's a lot of conversation of what that could mean for each conference, for each league. What would the updated scheduling principles be for all of these conferences? And the SEC has been on this media narrative trying to express how difficult their conference is, how much of a gauntlet the SEC is, and of course, it always just means more. Yesterday, Greg Sankey and his conference releasing a packet to all the media members there in attendance at the annual spring meetings about how difficult the SEC's strength of schedule is in comparison to the other power leagues. Of course, that was a big talking point for those that were upset that Alabama was left out of the initial 12-team college football playoff a season ago. Well, how can you compare the SEC's strength of schedule with how difficult the slate is to what Indiana had, or SMU, the final couple of at-large teams that made it into the college football playoff? What should be more important, wins and losses on the actual gridiron, or who you are playing and what that win or loss might be based on the strength of opponent? For me, this gets very, very frustrating, because let's look at the reality of college football. Not every power conference or any of the nine FBS leagues have the same scheduling philosophy, format, or model in place. For instance, the Big Ten plays nine conference games. The SEC only plays eight. And when you look at strength of schedule, because we have these regional disparities, this is not the National Football League with 32 organizations that has a balanced schedule each and every year for the most part based on the same annual scheduling principles. Every year is different. For each of these college programs and member institutions of these conferences, there is never going to be scheduling balance around our power conferences or around the nation. It is not going to happen. That is the reality of the situation. So to compare like to like is a farce. You cannot realistically do so. And when you have predictive metrics, which is what a strength of schedule number is, it takes into account what is expected out of that team. For instance, when we look at the SB Plus ratings on ESPN from Bill Connelly right now, following spring practice, of the top 25 teams, based on those predictive metrics, 12 hail from the SEC. Of course, the strength of this conference is going to be highlighted. But when you have 12 teams ranking in the top 25 before a single snap is underway of the 2025 season, unless they really falter based on that preseason expectation, those numbers don't necessarily move. So the strength of schedule for the SEC is baked into preseason expectation and thus can be continued throughout the entirety of the season. It is why results matter. It is why there is always going to be a difference in terms of scheduling balance. And that's why the wins and losses must be under consideration. We'll continue to have those conversations throughout 2025 in college football and, of course, beyond. But let's make sure the results on the football field matter in these conversations as well. That does it for us here on this Friday, on this week, on the Early Line on Sports Grid. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you on Monday, bright and early, starting at 8 a.m. Eastern.